be here at 8 o'clock. I thought I might mention, I sat through the last session, I thought I might mention that, man, this is quite a stretch to go through all of this after lunch and do all this sitting. So if the person next to you starts to sleep and then has a propensity to snore, the humane thing to do might be to give them a nudge. I'd say that would be for that person's benefit and also for the good of the order. All right, with those announcements out of the way, and I was asked to babble on for a little bit just while everybody who is going to join us would do so. Let me draw your attention to the nature of the programs this afternoon. The prior session had the heading Future Intellectual Challenge to the Welfare State, looking ahead to intellectual work in that area. And our program here at this session is Future Scholarship for Liberty, and then zeroes in on the issue of history of voluntary welfare. I wrote an article some time ago about the nature or the benefits to a conservative scholar right now of the pathological nature of our society in a lot of ways. The social pathologies and the weird aspects of alienated ideology certainly have their disastrous features, as we all know. But from a conservative scholar's point of view, this is an excellent time for scholarly activity. We have much more that's provocative that we can set our teeth into than we would have if we had a much more Pacific type of society with fewer of the neuroses. For example, just to cite my own work, one of the aspects of the conventional wisdom today is that the immigrants coming over, or the settlers coming over to this continent from Europe over in the 17th, 18th, and 19th centuries did a horrible thing in dispossessing the American Indian and were guilty of violating one treaty after another. And I thought that really that conventional wisdom ought to be looked at, and somebody should do an objective study of going back and very dispassionately looking at the history, seeing what the Indian policy was, and then try to get an honest grip on it in terms of just what kind of assessment to make. But doing so without the animus against mainstream American society that the left would bring to it. And so I wrote an article of that nature. And then another issue of that sort is the resettlement of the Japanese Americans from the West Coast during World War II. It said that we put 120,000 people into concentration camps. What would a conservative scholar think if he really looked at the facts of what was done and why it was done? Again, starting without the animus against our society that the left would bring to it. Now, really, there are great opportunities for conservative scholarship coming out of the very favorable developments in modern thought, in modern attitudes that have developed in the last few years. The movement toward privatization worldwide, the movement toward decentralization, and then also the loss of the implicit faith that government is the solution of all problems. Those tendencies, those changes in attitude, bring back very, very strongly a central notion of classical liberal thought, which I've liked to call the vitalist perspective over the years, that the vitality of millions of human beings living within freedom is the great productive force. Now, that's the theme of our program today in terms of the history of voluntary welfare, is looking at what people acting voluntarily do in a creative sense there. Adam Smith in The Wealth of Nations said the natural effort of every individual to better his own condition when suffered to exert itself with freedom and security is so powerful a principle that it is alone and without any assistance not only capable of carrying on the society to wealth and prosperity, but of surmounting 100 impertinent obstructions. And that, as I say, has been a central concept of classical liberal thinking for at least 200 years, longer than that. Now, extending this scholarship and looking forward to future scholarly opportunities today are our three panelists, Patricia Morgan from the Institute of Economic Affairs in London. I think you'll recognize that that's the same IEA that John Blundell heads, who is one of the speakers on our prior panel. David Beto from the University of Alabama, and then the responder, although I've really pondered with him as to what that word responder means in this setting too, is Patrick Fagan from the Heritage Foundation. But I've made it clear to him that he's very welcome to add his own insights and research, not be limited to simply responding. Now, our first speaker, Patricia Morgan, is a sociologist and has specialized in criminology, although with a particular emphasis on child rearing and the family. And she was for 5 years the Morris Finer Research Scholarship holder at the London School of Economics. And she's now the senior research fellow on the family for the Institute of Economic Affairs, as I've said, in London. Among her many writings is one recently entitled Liberating Women from Modern Feminism. And in January of 1995 here, the IEA published her book, Farewell to the Family, ends with a question mark there, and talks about the mother-child-state relationship in Britain. Right now she's working on a book to be called Capitalism in the Family. Now, when I mention these publications, really, I don't mean to diminish the speaker. They've written a great deal more than what I'm mentioning. She puzzled me this morning. She said, well, I'm here really to speak on behalf of David Green, who was mentioned and praised by John Blundell in the last session. Her qualifications are so great herself that I hope that a lot of her own thought shines through, too. But I'll let her give you the mix that she's prepared to give you. Patricia.